Warning: The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of unprotected talk, borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation Rock and Roll Friday. Music's great. Let's hear a little more Party Doll. When the chrome was thick and the women were straight. The America I love. So here we are, the end of another horrendous week. Another maniac went crazy and shot up a place, killed a young woman and another guy. Woman, man. Of course, they're hiding the fact that he had a rainbow flag in his house, because then people might start ripping down rainbow flags and taking down, statues to generals of the rainbow movement. I don't know. They can disinter generals of the rainbow movement, as they did with the Confederate flag. But let's put that aside. Crazy time. There's Obama, never missing an opportunity to stir up the masses of hate and stir up race war in America. He goes to New Orleans and the anniversary of Katrina. Right away, I read the minority story again. This is after this minority went to a loony bin minority, shot up two and killed white people because of alleged racism. This is the president back from vacation with the billionaires, goes to New Orleans and right away start already with the race and this, and the people don't have an opportunity, and they don't stop. No, they don't stop. It's Rock and Roll Friday. Michael Savage newsletter from this week. We must reopen the mental hospitals to deal with the homeless. We are, by the way, please keep your seatbelts on. We have not yet attained cruising altitude on the Savage Nation. We're going to give it about 30 minutes to attain 45,000 feet, because after yesterday, I am so glad you didn't take your seatbelts off. Because we crashed in hour one. Nothing to do with anyone. No one failed us. The internet was down across many areas of America. We don't know why. Hacking, Russians, Chinese, what do I know? We don't know. Northeast looked like a red zone went over it. And so I had to run up to another studio. Hours two and three were a dream. 45,000 feet, 500 miles an hour, 470 miles an hour, Mach 8. That's about Mach 9, I think. I'd like to fly at Mach 1.9 from here to New York next time. Well, that would be the Concorde used to do that. It went from New York to London in, 3 hours? And they eliminated it because it was too good. It was eliminated because it made too much noise. You hear the jet plane made too much noise. Okay. What should it fly on? Rubber bands? You could see I'm delaying. I'm just delaying to see if the show is running. So let me start with some of the news that I pulled. If you think I'm just delaying for delay's sake, you're wrong. The real media machine The real media machine behind Trump, conservative talk radio, says BuzzFeed. Now, it sounds like they're thanking us, but they're not. They're spanking us. Who Rosie Gray is, we don't know. I don't know Rosie Gray from Rosie O'Donnell, but we know Rosie O'Donnell hates Trump. So I can only assume that her distant cousin, Rosie Gray, also hates Trump. So BuzzFeed, which is a left-wing hit, or I don't know what it is really, and I heard of it, I don't know what it does, says the real media machine behind Trump is conservative talk radio. And the article opens like this. It says, "I'm for Trump," conservative talk radio host Michael Savage told listeners last month. "Point blank, best choice we have." Right now, the lead video on the radio host's YouTube channel is a, quote, exciting must-see compilation set to music of Trump moments from this summer. I didn't put that together. Ryan, will you check and see if that's true? I don't make the YouTubes. Who would have made that? So then they go on and says, the symbiotic relationship between Donald Trump and cable news is well established. But what's gotten less attention this summer beyond frustrated conservative circles online is another media engine driving Trump, good old-fashioned talk radio. For weeks, some of the biggest names in conservative talk radio, like Michael Savage, have praised Trump and his bashing of the politically correct left and Republican establishment. But the conservative talkers are also pushing his rhetoric on immigration and his vow to revoke birthright citizenship for the children of undocumented immigrants, and delivering the content straight to their millions of listeners. Well, let me straighten you out, Rosie. I don't know when you were born. You were probably born after 1994 when I started the radio. But my first book covered this subject, published in 1995. And that's my first political book Rosie. I wrote many books before that, Rosie, in the field of health. But the fact of the matter is, we're not pushing Trump's rhetoric on immigration. Trump is pushing America's rhetoric on immigration, Rosie. You see, again, they're doing a propaganda piece here. And they're trying to say that we're doing this just for ratings. Now, we really don't believe it, no. They're the only ones who believe anything. Only the left believes in their agenda. We on the conservative side, we don't believe in anything we say. It's just for ratings. That's all it is. That's all it is. Rick Wilson, an unknown hack, a so-called Republican strategist. I never heard of him. No one knows who he is. He probably makes $14,000 a year and has to sub in McDonald's somewhere. But that would make him a Republican strategist who has come under attack from fellow conservatives. Why does she lump the word Republican with conservative together when they're not one and the same thing? Again, propaganda. He said that he thought conservative talk radio's focus on Trump is a ploy to please listeners and keep them tuned in. The conservative media is more crowded than ever with sources of information. And though they still command large audiences, talkers don't have the same kind of hegemony they once did. All right, you get the picture. We don't really mean it. Only the left is sincere. And Trump has invented the whole issue of illegal immigration. Then, I'm not going to read the whole article. It says, Trump's embrace of hardline immigration ideas like ending birthright citizenship matches up perfectly with the policies that some of these hosts have been promoting for some time. Okay, good. So at least she gives credit where credit is due. Then he names two unknown talk show hosts who have seized on a quote by Senator Jacob Howard, the original sponsor of the citizenship clause, that they're using to bolster their case that the 14th Amendment doesn't guarantee citizenship to the children of people in the country illegally. Excuse me, the two unknown hosts got it from me, because if you remember, I read it to you straight out in New York. Remember when I was in New York? I hadn't heard it from anyone before. Okay, so the copycats got it from me, and now they're saying they invented it. It doesn't matter. The point is, the original senator who wrote the clause said it was never meant to grant citizenship to foreigners in plain English. Come on. Whatever. And that's that story. Now we can move on, .me. We're now at 38,000 feet, still attaining altitude. We are flying at 380 miles an hour at 38,000 feet, but we're still approaching cruising altitude. So please do not take off your seatbelts yet on the Savage Nation. We cannot yet serve you drinks. Only we in the pilot's compartment can drink. And I'm drinking some water right now. The phone number here, if you want to join the conversation, which hasn't yet started, is not up on my board, so I forgot the number. I think it's 8554. I don't know the number. The board up has to put my number up somewhere. I have it somewhere. Yeah, I know. Don't read it to me. Don't interrupt my brain. 855-400-SAVAGE. There it is. That's one rule of talk radio. Nobody is ever to talk to us while we're on the air. Unless you don't understand what this business is like. When we're talking, if someone talks to us, it throws the whole show off for about 20 minutes. Our heads need total calmness. 855-407-282 is the phone number. We must reopen the mental hospitals to deal with the homeless. Now, for 3 days, I have been talking about the sad disgrace of the city I love so much, San Francisco. I am talking about the corruption, the outright robbery of the billions of dollars in federal and state grants. I am talking mainly about the filth and the bums in the streets. I'm talking about the aggressive bums in the streets. I'm talking about bums defecating in the streets. I'm talking about bums urinating in the streets. I'm talking about tourists are saying it. I'm saying that they don't want me to talk about it. I've been told that the city fathers or the transgenders who run it, I don't know who, the transgenders who run the city do not want me talking about the bums in the streets. But even transgenders are assaulted by them. They don't like stepping on fecal matter. Nobody likes it, but nobody will stop this. And that's why I've been talking about opening up the mental hospitals. Now I want to move on to another topic. Jim, open up some lines to this topic, because I need to get this topic out there before I take my first break. I saw an article this morning. Many neurotics are more likely to be creative geniuses, study says. If you are a tense and moody neurotic, take heart. You could also be a creative genius, as a new study backs up the belief that neurotic misery and imagination go hand in hand. It could explain why so many original thinkers, such as the famously neurotic artist Vincent van Gogh. I don't know why she links Woody Allen with Sir Isaac Newton. Already the article has the, already the article's trash. Trash it. She links this pervert Woody Allen in with Vincent Van Gogh and Isaac Newton. You hear this? Already the study is flawed. But the point is that they were neurotic, they suffered for their art. And what she says is a new study says what such individuals have in common is a brain more sensitive to perceived threats than those of other people. And that panic button tendency is closely linked to an overactive, threat-generating imagination, say psychologists. Okay, the personality expert, Dr. Adam Perkins, okay, some expert, from King's College London said, "We're still a long way off from fully explaining neuroticism." Neuroticism? Neuroticism? Neuroticism. I like the last part of that word. But we hope our new theory will help people make sense of their own experiences and show that although being highly neurotic is by definition unpleasant, it also has creative benefits. Let me explain something to you. As a highly creative man myself, someone who's been writing since I'm a young boy, someone who's been drawing since I'm a young boy, someone who has published numerous books and has many unpublished plays and stories and poems, someone who's been writing and working all my life in the creative world, they're 100% wrong. Let me explain this, and I'll have to explain it in a little more detail, but I'm going to give you the short version now, the Savage Notes version. I remember when I was 18 years old and I was very worried about my highly sensitive brain and highly sensitive nature and how high I was flying with it and how close I got to the sun. I got very worried and I stumbled upon something. I don't know whether it was Aldous Huxley who wrote it, who wrote that we function, or we create despite our neurosis, not because of our neurosis. This is the exact opposite of the truth. Because if you want to feed into your highly creative nature and say, well, it's because I'm highly nervous, highly neurotic, whatever you want to call it, that I can create, what you will do is you will fuel that neuroticism, coffee, cigarettes, drugs, alcohol, sexual addiction, in order to thinking that you're going to make yourself more creative. It's the exact opposite of the truth. What I read that saved me, and I'm telling this to all the young people out there who think that by being wild and crazy, you're going to create more. No, you're going to kill yourself, and your creativity will come to gibberish. The opposite is true. We create despite our neuroticism, not because of it. There, that's Dr. Savage's lecture for the day, and I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. Turn it off. I'm not in the mood. I'm not really happy listening to that. So let's knock it off. It's Rock and Roll Friday, but we'll have to pick better songs. I don't know. I haven't had time to think about it. So we're doing the news. I see an article that moody neurotics are more likely to be creative geniuses, and I say the opposite is true. And the study says that that's why Van Gogh and Isaac Newton suffer for their art, because they have brains that are more sensitive to perceived threats than those of other people, and that that panic button tendency is closely linked to an overactive, threat-generating imagination, say psychologists. I think the exact opposite is true. As one of the most creative people in the United States of America, which I am, whether or not people agree with it, is highly irrelevant. The body of work speaks for itself. And I don't have to sell myself to you. I know what I have done, and I know what I have, and I also know what's going to be coming out over the next few years, some maybe even after I'm not here. And so the thing is, the opposite is true. They say support for the idea that neuroticism is associated with creativity has come from brain scan studies highlighting neural circuits that regulate self-generated thought. So that sounds very serious, right? It says a panic button in the amygdala, a key emotional center in the brain, is believed to trigger an inappropriate fear response after perceived threats are conjured up in the brain's prefrontal cortex. High scorers on neuroticism have a highly active imagination, which acts as a built-in threat generator, says Dr. Perkins. Now, as I said to you, it's very attractive to believe this, but I think the exact opposite could be derived from the exact opposite conclusion could be derived from the same observations, because as I think it was Huxley, pretty sure Aldous Huxley wrote it, or it could have been Laura Archera Huxley, his wife, wrote it, that highly creative people function despite their neurosis, not because of the neurosis. And that's one of the most liberating thoughts you could ever have in your life. because I've known people who are creative who fed their neuroses thinking they'd be more creative, and they acted out being creative. You've seen the pseudo artist, the poseur. You've seen them. You've seen the acts they go through to make themselves jumpy and crazy and wild. And most of those types are called poseurs, and they come to nothing. The really great artists that I have met, and I met only a few in my life, are very stable, very, very middle-class-looking individuals, incidentally. Those who show you how creative they are, whether it's through their look or their behavior, are usually fakers, what the French call poseurs. So the bottom line here is that if you're a younger person and you're trying to figure out how to act, which you all, everyone's doing, if you're trying to figure out how to act, by the way, you're not alone. Everyone's trying to figure out how to act. When you get older, you don't have to figure it out anymore. It's too late already. Your act is over. But the thing is, you don't have to ape being creative if you're creative. Just be creative. Just do your work. You don't have to show people how brilliant you are with your outfits and your this, green hair and a nose ring and an eye ring. It's unnecessary. It's just to show you're wild when you're really not. What tattoos on your eyelid. The fact is that as soon as you get a little older, you'll want the tattoos and the rings removed and then get back to work. So I was going to ask you to describe the most creative person you've ever met. I thought it would make for an interesting show. And I have a couple of callers on that, as well as the news stuff. I know many of you are meat and potatoes conservatives. All you want to hear is immigrants, Trump, George Ramos, who works for Punivision. Did that bring a chuckle to your heart? Did anyone steal? Who stole Punivision from me so far? Can anyone tell me who stole Punivision, my name for Univision, after the interview with Trump? Can anyone raise their hand? Does anyone know who stole Punivision from Michael Savage? I'm used to it. Okay, steal this idea, and I'll sue you. It's different than Abby Hoffman.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE.
Turn it off. I'm not in the mood today, sorry. It's not the right time of day for fast rock and roll, and I'm not 13 years old anymore with a ducktail haircut. I think we'll have to go to another format of music. The Rock and Roll Friday works, I mean, up to a point, but if it's the wrong timing, and radio is all about timing, it just didn't sound right to me. More in the mood for Mozart, but that would kill the audience altogether. Do you think the people who are out there listening to talk radio want to hear Mozart? I don't even want to hear Mozart. Moody neurotics more likely to be creative geniuses. All right, that's an interesting story, but maybe not to you. Maybe not to you. I don't know. To me, it's interesting. And there's a rule in radio. If it's interesting to the host, it's generally interesting to the audience because it's called talk radio. We're the leaders of the conversation of our own show. I'm going to sit here and read the Drudge Report. You've all read it. You heard it all morning. And you can read it in, 30 seconds or 60. And you get the news. I can't just read websites and then read a story and ask you what you think of it. Like Hillary already has the votes. Now, you want me to talk about that? Or TSA agent charged in molestation at LaGuardia Airport. Do you think I'm going to just read these things to you? That she lured, or he lured a student into the bathroom? Or do you think that I'm going to talk about a storm battering the Caribbean heading for Florida? Or do you think that I'm going to talk about the story that he has? Will ABC News release full Vester Flanagan manifesto? I'm not going to talk about these things. Or the other headlines on the Drudge Report. Huma operates at center of Clinton universe. I'm not going to talk about it. Or the Black Transgender Lives Matter activist disrupted vent. Or Ashley Madison CEO steps down a wake of hack. I am not going to talk about that. I am not going to talk about the fact that Jeb Bush is so yesterday that he's raffling off tickets to a debut somewhere with a guy who failed in television. Who was it who just left TV? Is he going to introduce Jeb Bush next? Here, Russian billionaire building $450 million super yacht. You want me to talk about that? Good luck to him. He didn't steal it from me. He stole it from the Russian people, not from me. It's their problem. Why would anyone build a $450 million super yacht? Why not just buy an old ocean liner and use it as your and refurbish it? Well, okay, it's not new. I want to look at that story. That story's interesting to me. Or do you want to do the creative? You want me to get the creative? There we go. You see, I got the people who like the creative side. What do you do when you have £6 billion to spend? Russian billionaire splashes out £292 million super yacht he designed himself to enjoy with his supermodel wife. Mr. Melnichenko spent $450 million on a luxury ship which will be named the Sailing Yacht A. It boasts 8 decks, a glass observation measure, crew of around 54, largest privately owned. Well, it's going to put Geffen into a tailspin. The masts are taller than Big Ben's tower, and its sails are bigger than a football field when all are flying. All right, so good luck to him. How do he steal his money? How do he make his money? How do he rob his money? How do he steal his money? Look at the super yacht, man. She's a real mutt. I'm sorry, I don't want to get... What do you mean supermodel? She looks like a mousy broad from Yemen. Where'd he get her from? God in heaven, what passes for supermodel today? What is everybody who's slim a supermodel now? I don't happen to like being on yachts, incidentally. And don't think I'm jealous. I'm not. I could be on a yacht right now if I had sense, if I had brains. If I wasn't so creative, frankly, I'd be on a yacht in the Mediterranean instead of being on the radio. You know, that's absolutely the truth. And it's perfect weather now in the Mediterranean. I've been invited. Come to the Mediterranean. Come for a week. Come for 2 weeks. Sit on the boat. I can't. Here's why I don't go on a yacht. I get nervous. After one meal, I want to leave. It's that simple. I want to be in my own little bed with my dog. Okay, so you could take your dog to the Med. Then what? I'm going to march around the streets of Saint-Tropez. What am I going to see? Frenchmen with long faces who have lost their nation because they're so silly? I'm going to have a wonderful meal. I can't have a meal here. Wherever I go, I cook better food myself, to be honest with you. I am so over restaurants. Whatever I say, low salt, no spices, a little spice, not too much spice. I don't want it too bland, like a hospital meal. Put in a touch of spice, but don't make it like it's in Guadalajara. Make it a little more like Italian rather than Mexican. I want the sauce to be red sauce. I want the tomato. But it doesn't come out that way. I get a bottle of sauce and throw it on spaghetti, and I cook the spaghetti soft, and it's perfect. I watch a TV show. I don't have to stare at a wall. But people like these things, and it's all about showing off. Here it is. Okay, he founded the fertilizer producer Eurochem, the coal producer SUEK, the power generator SGK, and the pipe exporter TMK, along with Sergei Popov. That's interesting. Now, I don't want to go into Russian oligarchs because they're very dangerous. But you see, when you hear that they founded these companies, what it really means is they took it from the state and they became rich that way, along the lines of what senators in the United States of America do with the solar business. Since senators in the United States cannot outright steal the coal industry, they create an alternative industry which has no validity whatsoever at this time in human history, called solar. Now, we all want things to run off the sun. And what they do is they make billions of dollars on industries they create with government grants. Do you get how it works? Which is why the fool on the hill goes down there to Las Vegas and lectures on solar plants the right after the vacation with the billionaires and how evil coal is. And the biggest coal basher in America, George Soros, that fraud, that money-changing, back-of-the-temple fraud that Jesus warned us about. Jesus warned us about George Soros, that double-talking money-changer in the back of the temple, bashes coal for a year and drives the price of the number one coal company down from $98 a share to $1 a share, and then he buys it at $1 a share. And they say to him, isn't that hypocrisy? And he gives him the middle finger, him and his sons. Well, now you understand how revolutions are caused. Now you understand what revolutions come from. Now you understand what happens after revolutions. Now you understand when you look at Mussolini, for example, and what they did to him at the end of the road, hanging him upside down with the mistress, like a side of beef, because he did such things to the Italian people. Unbelievable. So eventually people freak out. Hopefully it'll never happen here. You know, it can't happen here. Will never happen here. Won't happen here. Andrei Melchynek is known in the sailing world as a pioneering owner. I said I wouldn't read these stories. What teeth on him? He looks like a werewolf, this guy. He scares me. Let's see. Oh, supermodel. There they are, stepping high. Have acquired a second sport. Oh, he's got a dog like mine. He's a nice guy. The couple regularly party on their $300 million first yacht with celebrity. A celebrity. Oh, here comes a celebrity. Hello. Hey, there's a celebrity coming aboard. Pipe him on the ship. Hey, he's not like us. A celebrity is like you and I, only they have more celebrity. It's that simple. That's a takeoff from something written by a friend of Ernest Hemingway, who said the rich are like you and I, only they have more money. I mean, what do you think? They're different because they're celebrities? So their shoes cost more, their jeans cost more, their dogs cost more, their servants cost more. But at the end of the day, what do you think it is? You have to learn how to live with yourself. Do you know all of these things yet? Does anyone know all of this stuff at this point in their life, or do I have to teach you everything every day? A lot of it is showing off that you have the money, and that's the end of it. We all do it up to a certain point. What did I want to say before I got distracted by the Drudge Report when I said I would not read the Drudge Report? I got distracted by the motor yacht. Maybe I do want to go to the Caribbean for a week in September before the book comes out. And I have to start telling you why you should. Because you should understand that it's an important book. But I'm not ready for it. It's too soon. It's not Labor Day. And the school is back already. The brats are back in school already. Thank God. Thank God they're not in the streets getting into trouble. I'm glad they're back in school. What are they learning? What are they teaching them in school now? America is bad. Mother and father are bad. The church is evil. Let's see. White males stole the world and made it unsafe for minorities. Let's see what else they teach. The flag is an evil sign of oppression. That's basically the teaching now because the psychotic vermin took over the schools as well as everything else. Okay, we got the creative calling. We got this calling, that calling. Am I near a break yet? No. Who's the greatest caller on the creative issue? Wayne is not bad. Then we got one on gun control and mental health. Because I said yesterday we have to find a way to keep guns out of the hands of the mentally ill. Oh, did they go crazy. I happen to not be a fan of the NRA. I don't like Wayne LaPierre. I'll be very honest with you. I think that they're all greedy and they're in it for themselves. Now, up to a point, they do a good job. But like any other organization, it's all about the greenbacks for themselves. And don't put them on a pedestal. The founding fathers were different than you and I. I love those guys. Why the founding fathers were different than you and I. How were they different than you and I? They were not superhumans. They didn't come from another planet. They were slaveholders. They were piggish. Some of them were not piggish. And they created a country, and they wrote some good documents. And by the way, the great founding fathers, for those of you who buy this malarkey, one of the first things they enacted after the American Revolution was putting together the biggest army that had ever been seen in America to put down the Whiskey Rebellion. Amongst farmers who didn't want to pay a tax on the whiskey they were making for themselves. There's your founding fathers view. So I'm tired of making people into what they aren't. We are all basically at a certain point the same. Some of us are far more intelligent than others. Some are stupider than others. Some are meaner than others. Some are more beautiful than others. But the thing is ultimately, at the end of the day, what are we? We're dust. We go back to dust. We start as a... Well, I read the Bible on this. It's pretty ugly. They're depressed, those guys. You know, the prophets were all depressed when you think about it. If you look at Isaiah and those guys, man, they needed medication. They were so depressed. They were walking around ancient Israel at the time. Everyone else was having a good time. They had leather sandals on. They were slaughtering sheep. They were knocking off lamb for lunch. They were behaving like this super yacht guy. They were having as much sex as they could everywhere they wanted. So these guys hated it because they didn't have any of that. They were probably miserable and poor. Say, Robert Book, God's going to punish you if you have too good at you will be cast into the fires of hell. How dare you enjoy yourself? Be like me, miserable and horrible. Walk around in misery, utter misery every second of your life. Wear ugly clothing. Stutter if you have. That's what it comes down to. A lot of it's based on jealousy. Okay, did you have enough time yet? It's now 45 minutes after the hour in the Savage Nation. We are at cruising altitude. You can take off your seatbelts. You can walk around the cabin. You can please listen to the steward eye when they tell you to return to your seat, or else we will strap you in your seat. We will muffle your mouth with tape, and we will have you arrested for disrupting the Savage Nation. In a moment, I shall return with more wit and wisdom on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Hey, our Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust for wealth insurance, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-COIN. It's the Savage Nation. Every day another surprise where my heart drops out of my chest. And we're talking about a number of topics, some in the news, some out of the news, what's going on. And the biggest story of the day is whatever story is to you the biggest story. Let's take some callers. Nick on line 2, WMAL, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, Dr. Savage, your story about the moody neurotics and the artistic streak, I think I'm one of them. I heard it. I read the article a little bit this morning, and I almost crap myself. I'm like, oh, my God, this is describing me. I'm a writer. I've written since I was six. Recently, in June, a former political satirist and a former political or stand-up comic, and I used to hang out in the comic circuit. I've done radio, TV, and...
All right, fine. So you're giving me a self-promotional tour. What is the point of your call, though? I don't get it.
But the point is that I just really related to the article, and I really related to what you were
Okay, but my
about.
Point... Nick, I actually said the opposite. I said that creative people function despite their neurosis, not because of it. That's what I was saying.
Well, it...
All right, thanks for the call. Moody neurotics are more likely to be creative geniuses, study says. And I said the opposite may be true. We like to think, oh, he's a crazy... Oh, look at her. Look at the hair is all... Look at her. She chain smokes. She's got tattoos, and she drinks incessantly. That makes her a genius? I'm sorry, I don't buy it. The really creative, fine artists that I've known or the ones that I've respected are generally very buttoned-down people, incidentally. And they don't wear it on their sleeve, so to speak, to show you how creative they are. WABC, Wayne, your opinion counts. What's on the Savage Nation today?
Hi, Michael. I just wanted to say that the most creative person that I've ever met personally is Isaac Asimov.
Oh, he was wonderful. What did he write, 120 books?
Oh, incredible body of work.
Did you know him personally?
Nonfiction. No, I met him briefly. He was making an appearance at...
You know, it's interesting. The people who are Lilliputians compared with me try to ridicule me because I've written 30 books. They think that's a mark of not being a good writer. Asimov wrote over 100 books. What, are you going to criticize him for being prolific?
No, certainly not.
No, well, you see, this is the problem with Lilliputians. And the Lilliputian never understands what Lilliputianism is. They're way over their heads. So thank you for that call. WABC BJ, welcome to the program. Give us your opinion on any subject. Go ahead, please.
Well, doctor, you're right about the neuroses married to great creativity. In fact, the neuroses actually, in the performing arts, I believe, the neuroses actually helps hone the creative energies.
But what you say, hold it, you say I'm right when I said the opposite is what I believe. This is two callers in a row who didn't hear me. I said that the article says that moody neurotics are more likely to be creative geniuses, and I'm saying that they're geniuses despite their neuroses, not because of their neuroses.
I don't necessarily agree with that 100%.
All right, fine. Well, you can disagree, fine. But I will tell you that revelation by Aldous Huxley or Laura Huxley that I read when I was young helped me from falling down the rat hole of aping the neurotic behavior that artists thought that they were supposed to behave.
Yeah. That.
You know, that's what I'm saying. It's like people in the conservative movement think that they have to ape being super conservative. They have to out-conservative each other to prove their credentials. That's the same kind of poseur that I'm talking about.
No, that I would find very credible. I think so.
It's like the idiots in the Black Lives Neuter movement, or whatever it's called. They're now urinating and crapping on the American flag. Now, do they actually think that they're going to start a national movement by? It's disgusting. They said that we're going to start tearing down American flags. And there's pictures of some of these low-life nobodies who've done nothing of any use for the human species, wiping their behinds with the American flag. This is an example of stupidity, vulgarity, ugliness, and uselessness. Okay? This is not an example of creativity. You understand the difference?
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of unprotected talk, borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
All right, hour number two of the Savage Nation. We are at cruising altitude, 45,000 feet, 400 knots, whatever. And I'm not going to repeat what we've been doing. We're talking about creativity, neuroses. We're talking about super yachts, supermodels, supersize this, supersize that, super burgers, super soy. We're talking about Legionnaire's disease in San Quentin. I didn't mention that yet. But, gee, I wonder where that came from. Legionnaires' disease in San Quentin, which will now, of course, spread to the sheriffs who have to take care of those lovely inmates there. And Legionella, Kim fires top military leaders. Since taking over in 2011, he has ordered a series of purges and executions. Imagine that. And a dumb basketball player with tattoos went over there and said he's a nice fella. Great nation. The news is horrible. It's disgusting. It's a week of pain and sorrow with that maniac who shoots that young reporter and the sound man in his twisted, sick mind, Mr. Victimhood, marching around. Whatever anyone said to him, he took as a racial slur. If someone said to him in the radio station, God, they're really out in the field with that one, he thought they were referring to the slavery. This guy was a nut. He fought with everyone, argued with everyone that it'd remove him. And then this poor woman was killed as a result of this maniac not being put into a nut house. Michael Savage newsletter, we must reopen the mental hospitals to deal with the homeless. I still stand by that remark. Just come to San Francisco and go to City Hall. Both inside and out City Hall, you'll see the wisdom in what I just said. Judge blocks Obama EPA rule as federal power grab over state waters. I don't even understand that story. Those kinds of stories don't appeal to me. Let's see what I have. Bye-bye, Ronald. Obama's top labor arbiter dealt a blow to the franchise business. What else is new? Why should Obama's labor arbiter want anyone to have a franchise or a business? All right, let's go to the callers. I got plenty of sound from Trump and others that I'm going to dump. 855-400-7282. Let's begin in Florida. I'm not. I almost went to Florida from New York. I was asked, do you want to go to Florida for a week after New York? And then I heard the internet was causing trouble in my house. I said, no, I can't go through this. Thank God I came home and had only internet trouble here where I'm at home, where I almost had three heart attacks yesterday. WFTL, line 8, what's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Hey, I think you're in the wrong business. You should be on the stage doing stand-up.
Wow, what a step up that would be, man. That's really a step up from being a famous author and broadcaster. That would be a real step up to be a stand-up comic. I couldn't wait for that one.
Yeah, well, I'm from Schmendrick Land, and I know hilarity when I hear it.
Yeah, but why would I want to be a stand-up comedian when I am a famous author and broadcaster? Why would I want to go down the scale of success, the ladder of success?
Oh, no, Colin, you're too good for that. Anyhow,
that's what I am too good for being a stand-up comedian. That's for guys like Bill Maher, who can't do anything else. They put a suit and tie on him, and we're supposed to think he's any different than the others in the unknown comedy clubs. The only reason Bill Maher is where he is because his twisted left-wing fanatical agenda matches that of the bosses of HBO. Do you actually think he's funny?
Well, the thing you did on Isaiah just recently.
Oh, that was funny, where I said basically he was jealous of the Israelis that were having a good time.
Pure stand-up.
It is funny, though. Come on, people would love to hear that in a nightclub. I get it. They'd love to have a drink and hear a guy say that about the biblical prophets, because the truth is they probably were miserable, horrible people.
Yeah,
let me ask you something. If you had a choice, would you rather hang out, let's say, and have a drink with a guy like Isaiah from the Bible, or the guy that Isaiah was putting down?
I don't know. I think I'd be interested in Isaiah.
Really?
Sounds interesting.
He was a miserable human being. He said the world was coming to an end. The Jews were going to be thrown into exile because they misbehaved. God was mad at them because they were having too good a time. What kind of God is this that wants us to have a miserable time? Isn't it possible that God wants us to have a good time instead of a bad time?
Well, I hope he wants us to have
I would hope so. What kind of God is it that wants us to be miserable every second? Isn't life hard enough? Shouldn't we have a good time once in a while?
Yeah, I'm for that.
That's all. I think we ought to send a petition to God saying that after millennia, it's time for him to revise his thinking of humanity. Give us a break. It's a tough thing to get up every day. Shave, brush your teeth, have the juice, have the coffee, put on clothes, go to work, not hurt anybody, not hurt yourself, make a living, not do anything particularly wrong. It's a hard thing. You got to occasionally have a good time in the midst of all of this. Okay, what do you want to... But thank you for that call. I'm not giving out copies of Government Zero yet because they're not ready. After Labor Day, I'll have them in the warehouse for free giveaway. You could only get the limited first printing now on Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com. I can guarantee you I'll start reading it after Labor Day, but we have another week of before the whole thing... When is Labor Day? It's next weekend already? I can't believe it. I don't go to parties. You go to a Labor Day party? I don't really do it. I stay home. I cook a hot dog. Maybe, you know, like a health dog. I don't eat the hot dogs. It's garbage. It's from the slaughterhouse floor. I don't like a tofu dog on the other side of it. I don't, because I don't like soy. Soy gives you breasts if you're a man. Haven't you read the latest? I love all of these guys who think that by eating soy-based products, they're doing them, they're doing themselves a favor. They have breasts, for God's sakes. They look like their grandmother from eating soy-based products. You're not meant to eat soy. It's like, that soy-based foods are for people who can't afford meat, fish, or poultry. That's why the Asians had to have soy, because they couldn't eat the animals that were providing them with the milk and the wool. They didn't want to kill the livestock. Thank God that the soybean came along for them to develop into tofu, the most disgusting thing ever made. I don't like that stuff. It always makes you feel like bloated. I can't digest. Just a bean curled up like that. Look, it's good for them if they think it's good. It really isn't. The estrogenic effects of soybean are well established. I'm trying to be serious now. I don't eat that crap. I won't eat it. I won't eat it. It's just garbage. If you really want to have a meal, so you don't eat that. What do you need it for? What do you want to talk about? Artists, I saw. Here's a guy I saved. Mark, line two. Go ahead. How did I save your life?
Dr. Savage, I was listening to you in the 90s, and I'm a working artist, and I went through that whole period, you know, where I thought I was a little crazy. I thought I had anxiety. I went through all this stuff. I went to a psychiatrist. They put me on all these psych meds, and I listened to you one night. I was driving late at night, and you were on in this area late at night at that time. And you were talking about, you know, the wild horses, you know, in your team, and, you know.
Yes, indeedy. Did I ever see those horses in my team? Go ahead. Tell the audience that observation, one of my keen ones.
Well, basically you said that everybody has this inside of them. You have these wild horses, and they're going to pull you in one direction or the other. And if you don't want to go in the wrong direction, you tame those horses. You figure out how to change them. You don't pretend like they don't exist. And
exactly, you don't block the horses that are in your head. What you do is you harness them all together in a large team, and you get a lead horse that listens to you, and let the lead horse use the other horsepower to take you where you want to go, not where they want to go.
Exactly.
And, so what? And that observation helped you rein in some of your more, let us say, destructive horses?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I was, I was divorced at the time. I was living in a little apartment. I mean, I was as low as you can get.
And where are you today?
Today, I own a business. I have a beautiful wife. I have three young children, and I was just accepted in a very big art show in L.A. And I'm doing everything that I dreamed of. I am working for myself. My wife and I homeschool our kids.
Wait, are you saying all of this is because you were able to recognize that you weren't crazy, that everyone had these multiple, let us say, entities within ourselves that were pulling us in many directions, and that you learned how to harness all of those voices, so to speak?
I did, and you know what? And what was
great. It's a great call. I love it. I can't. You're breaking up a bit, but hey, Mark, thank you for that call. I remember when I came upon that observation. It's all my own. I was going through a very bad phase, and it really wrecked me. And I don't want to go back and start with the crybaby stuff. But the fact is, it was because of affirmative action. They wouldn't hire brilliant white males. They only wanted the other type of people. And the fact is that it wrecked me. I worked all my life for that, what I wanted. I couldn't get it. I had two young children, couldn't make a really good living. I didn't know which way to turn. And it does force a man to crack up. You know, it's one thing to not succeed when you've not done anything. It's quite another to not succeed when you've done everything right and you're really good at what you do and the society says drop dead because of your race. That's really a bad place to be. And you become angry, you become depressed, you start to strike out. And then all of the other things start to happen. What I observed at that time was, in deep thinking, was if you read Shakespeare and you look at all the characters that are in any of Shakespeare's plays, it ranges from the fool to the king, correct? And they're all voices in Shakespeare's head. So I said to myself, wait a minute. How does Shakespeare conjure up all these voices? How does he get a fool talking to a king and a wise man talking to a latrine operator? Where do they all come from? Well, they're all characters within his own mind. They're manifestations of Shakespeare. So I said, within all of us, there are all of these entities, and what we have to do is learn to constrain them, pull them together. In other words, as I said to you, harness them together and put a lead horse in the bunch of that 16 horses, whatever the number is, and then you lead that lead horse where you want to go, because you're ultimately in charge of your own destiny. That was my own observation. And so far, it's worked for me. It doesn't mean tomorrow I wouldn't go off the side of the road. You don't know what tomorrow will bring. This is the thing. None of us should be too sure to congratulate ourselves how well we're doing, because God and fate have a way of taking us and overturning the apple cart just when we think that cart is on the way to market. I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Your Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. It's the only company I trust for tangible assets, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-COIN.
4:23 on the East Coast. 23 minutes after the hour in Dubai, Moscow. Like you don't know it. All right. Play Bobby for a minute, will you? I like Bobby Darin. He's still got the classical feel to it. Here's a little news for you. FBI A-team leading serious probe of Clinton's private email server. Yeah, right. They're really going to get to the bottom of it. Obama's FBI is going to get to the bottom of Clinton's violation of every law in the land. An FBI A-team is leading the extremely serious investigation into Hillary Clinton's server, with the focus including a provision of the law pertaining to gathering, transmitting, or losing defense information, an intelligence source tells Fox News. Right. Barack Obama, the most honest president in the history of the world, and the FBI, independent as you can ever imagine, is going to really pursue this to the ends of the earth to get to the truth. Right. Yeah, I have total faith in the FBI today. Robert on WBAP, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello, Dr. Savage.
Come on, make your point. Fire away. 30 seconds or less.
Okay. First of all, the lady that was on the phone with you before me had talked to you about the prophets. The point I was going to make was that the prophets were not feeling their own misery, nor were they miserable people. All of God's word, God claims to have written, and both Isaiah and Jeremiah were in the direct presence of God. So the inspiration of God...
Well, hold on now. Whoa, whoa, whoa. I mean, you could believe that if you wish. I believe they were just ordinary residents of ancient Israel who wrote that stuff. They were the talk show hosts of their time.
So you don't think the Bible was...
They needed an audience. So they said... So they needed an audience. So the only way to get an audience is to scare the people. They said, you're having a good time, you're drinking, you're running around with women, you're wearing nice clothing, God is going to punish you. Guys, what are you, crazy? What did I do wrong? Never mind, God wants you to be miserable and short like me with a stutter. It's a joke. Take it easy. Take it easy. A lot of people take this so, they get mad at me if I say a thing like that. But I actually believe that they were just ordinary people who wrote that stuff to scare the Israelites, because nobody would listen to them. They couldn't make a living. Don't you understand? There was no way to make a buck. There were no comedy clubs. There were no electricity. There was no electricity yet. So they didn't have a microphone in their house anywhere. They couldn't sit and do a talk show and have the world listen to them. So they walked around with an old robe. They looked like people from Iraq do today. And they went in the streets. So who would listen to a nut walking around with ripped sandals and old clothing that needed to be washed? There were no washing machines. Do you realize how hard it was to keep yourself hygienic in the biblical time? 120-degree heat, no washing machines, no air conditioning, no laundry detergent. It's disgusting. Just think Mosul after the electrical grid goes down, and you'll have some idea what it was like. So the guy's walking around. He needs an audience. He doesn't have any skills. He can't be a carpenter. He can't make leather. He's not a leather maker. He's not a jeweler. So what does he how do you make a buck? I'll walk around and I'll say, I spoke to God, and he told me that you're going directly to you nowhere because of your behavior. So he starts to attract a little crowd. He gets the people who actually are doing well, but they feel bad about themselves. So they start to listen. Hey, listen to that guy. Look at him over there. What's he saying? Well, he's saying, well, we're all no good. Who wants to listen to that? No, listen. He's making sense. We're no good. What do you mean we're no good? You're born evil. You're no good. Everything you do is no good. You're going to go directly to you nowhere if you don't stop. All right, listen. They hang around. They're knocking off a lamb sandwich listening to him. And little by little, the audience builds. One, did you hear that guy over there? What's his name? Ezekiel. And what's he saying? Well, we're all going to go, you know where we're going to lose the nation if we don't. And that's how it built. It built on that. But I don't believe it was God's word necessarily. It was just like they were stand-up comics at that time or talk show hosts without a microphone. That's possible. How do we really know what went on? There was no video in those days. There was no YouTube from the biblical time. Then we could find out what really went on, who the guy really was, if he was a faker. Okay, 855-407. I like this topic. People like this topic, the creativity, neurotic thing. I knew it would trigger talk. Do you think I want to talk about Huma's emails and Hillary's lying and cheating and stealing to get where she is and wants to do 8 more years of it? Do you think I want to talk about things like that? Do you think I really want to read the news that did Hillary Clinton know the emails on the server were classified? You see how far Fox is moving to the left? They're already parsing it for Hillary Clinton. They attacked Trump. Martha Washington is finished. I don't care whether her ratings are good. She has no credibility whatsoever. Zero. Megyn Kelly has zero credibility. I don't care if her ratings go through the ceiling. She's just another beauty contestant of Roger Ailes. They built a whole network based upon legs and lipstick. What are you kidding? Doesn't mean they're stupid, but it's legs and lipstick. Compare them to Wolf Blitzer. Who would you watch?
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
I imagine the people listening across the country. It's a powerful feeling. This is the problem with talk radio, is many of us in the business think that we have more influence than we do. And the most important thing is to have humility in this business, because we don't have as much influence as we think we do. And I know that for a fact. It's easy to think, oh, you got a microphone, you're on hundreds of stations and people listen, millions of listeners. It's all, underestimate it. But, you know, at the end of the day, people are going to make up their own minds about things. So prophets we're not, you know. So what are we? We're talkers. Now, what do we do as talkers? Well, depends upon who you listen to. Information, education, yeah, up to a point. But if it becomes boring after a while, it's like a bad professor. Reminds me of people like with bad Robert Hall suits with tuna fish stains in their lapel, you know, on the way on a subway. I mean, who can listen to that day and night? I once had a math teacher, for example. I liked him very much in the seventh grade. When he had a halitosis on him, to this day I have migraines thinking about him. He would lean over my seat, and he, like I was doing a math problem, an algebra thing, I remember in the ninth grade. I can, to this day, Parsons Junior High School, tall, thin guy like Ichabod Crane. Nice guy, liked him, good teacher. But a howl, like a green howl came off his mouth. You can't learn when you are hit with a halitosis like that. What kid on earth could put up with it? But in those days, you couldn't say anything. It would be insulting to the teacher to say, look, hey, buddy, you know, go get a Lavore, do something. Today, he'd be reported probably for abuse. You know, breath abuse or something. I don't know what it would be. But a kid wouldn't put up with that today, would he? Guys, I mean, would a kid put up with a teacher with such halitosis today? I think they'd report him. They'd have to go gargle. They'd give him, like, gargle therapy. Once a half hour, he'd have to leave the room to do a... It's not funny. What I'm saying is, how much can you take of a teacher with bad breath? It's the same thing with a talk show host with bad breath or bad ideas. How much can you listen to it? That's why I'm trying to be a little more creative and fun. I'm going to give you an example of how creative I really am. I'm going to blow my own horn. I'm going to tell you the emiss on this, the truth. As I am doing this, it's a hiatus time for me, late August. It's not Labor Day. I'm on the cusp of a new book, Government Zero, that's already on Amazon, that you know. I have just finished a book about my dog, Teddy, and I, and the publisher is sending me covers to pick. Should the car be red? Should the car be black? Does it match your shirt? This is all during the show, and I said, it's a black car. The photographer took a picture of me in a black car. Why did the art director make the car red? So that was going on. I am editing my journals from 1963 to 1969. I don't mean at this minute. And that's been a one-year project. It's been very hard to do because you shouldn't look back. I got to tell you, you know, there's an adage in the Bible, don't look back. Let me tell you, it's a good adage. So I'm trying to decide, what do I really want to say in the journal? Which one of the early me's do you want to see? Which one of the early me's do I want you to see? You know, it's like the three faces of Eve when I was young, still becoming myself. And the thing is that a journal is about that. You don't know which one you're going to show, so you show them all. And I discovered plays I had written in the 1960s, like The Investigator, which I just discovered this week and is being typed as I speak. It's about me as a young welfare worker on the Upper West Side of New York and how it converted me from being a starry-eyed liberal into a realist. when I saw that the recipient of welfare was living better than I was as a college graduate. That was the beginning of my awakening. So that's being worked on in addition to many other things that I'm doing. And it keeps me going. What I'm saying is, do I really need to do this? Yes. Why? Because I'm inspired by some great artists such as Rodin, who many years ago, I read his writings where he said, work, work, work is the only salvation. And he's right. When you get in these corners with yourself, you don't know what to do. What do you know? Sit on a yacht and drink alcohol? Sit on a yacht and go on a ski-doo? I don't understand how much you can do of those things until you go nuts from it altogether. That's why I was ridiculing the super yacht before. I can't do it. To me, if I'm not working, I'm not living. I'm going, my mind is somewhere else. So I think that creativity and hard work go hand in hand, and it's also a way of constraining the neurotic nature of all creative people. That's what I was trying to say to you, is that the more you work, the less neurotic you'll be. See? All right, let's go to the callers. KSFO, local station. Pat, welcome from the land of the homeless, San Francisco. What's on your mind?
Oh, my God. Dr. Savage, I am honored to talk to you. I had to pull over. I was laughing so hard about you talking about the guy with halitosis, the teacher. You are like a faucet of information, whereas all of the other ones are just drip, drip, drip. And you...
I shouldn't put anyone else down, but we all listen to each other. If this can't be an entertainment medium, it doesn't have any reason to exist anymore.
It's a constant with you. The other ones are a drip.
Well, all right, we all have our own audiences with some overlap, you know. You can only do so much, you know, but I'm going to sit here and talk about my hemorrhoids. I'm not going to do that like Glenn Beck.
Right, I enjoy you.
Today, the latest thing in talk radio is to talk about their infirmities for an hour and a half. This I don't understand. How can anyone listen to that? How can a talk show talk about his infirmities for an hour and a half and expect an audience to listen to him? So the thing was, I did have a teacher with halitosis like that. Did you have one as well?
I never got that close to my teacher.
See, I have a highly sensitive brain, and my olfactory sense is probably as sharp as that of, let's say, as sharp as it gets in a human. I can detect off scents in human beings from a long distance away. Now, that is both a blessing and a curse, I got to tell you. And I know when it started. This started in the first grade when I had a teacher who today would be a certifiable loony bin case. I can remember her to this day like the teacher in the seventh grade. She was obese, and she sat on the front desk, I swear to God, with her legs askew. I was a five-year-old in the first grade. I didn't even know what I was looking at. She sat with her legs askew, an obese woman. But she wore a toilet water on her. That was what cheap perfume was those days. That gave me a migraine. That's when my migraines began. So I always associated this exhibitionism with bad perfume. And since then, I have migraine headaches. That's how they started. Now, that's, again, an olfactory story, but it's a true one. I know. People think I'm doing this for shtick. I cannot make this stuff up. I can't make it up. It's all true. I had a teacher just like that. Then I got hit again in the ninth grade with the olfactory overload with the HAL job. And he was a very nice guy by you. Now, Pat, I got to tell you, since we're on halitosis, I got to give one more HAL story, and then I'm going to move on to the serious stuff like Obama and Nancy Pelosi and Hillary Clinton. Oh, God, Hillary Clinton. Here's one. Did you ever hear my story of one-armed Frank and the halitosis? Okay, he's laughing already in advance. Let me save that for another day, because I was rifling through the Savage Childhood Stories, which we usually run around holiday Christmas time, you know, Love by the Sewer Plant, Louie the Alcoholic, Half Man and Half Woman in Long Beach, the cultural phenomenon, all of the childhood stories, the Chestnut Man outside the Museum of Natural History. I went by the Natural History Museum last week in New York, and the chestnut men are gone. My son said to me, what's a chestnut man? They were guys, they were like bimmies, who roasted chestnuts over an open fire in the cold day. Well, they were thieves on top of it all. I'd go there when I was 11 by subway. We'd be by the chestnuts, and this guy, he said, hey boys, you want to see pictures like this? And he pulled out pictures like this, and we looked at them, being boys. And he says, you want to see more pictures like this? You can come up to my place with me. I'll show you a pic. We knew he was sick. We never went to his room. And we wanted to turn the chestnut thing over on him with the hot coals, but we didn't do it because those days you would be constrained. Today you would have gotten a beating for doing that to a kid. But they're gone, those guys, today. They're working for de Blasio in the Vice Department. So there was a guy with Hallett. It was my father-in-law, Lowry, I was talking about one. Oh, One-Armed Frank. It's a short story, 2 minutes. Indulge me. It's summer. And One-Armed Frank had one arm. But in those days, you didn't ignore the anomaly or disability. You talked about it with the guy. So the guys, it was simple guys in my father's store, named him One-Armed Frank because he had one arm. I don't know how he lost it. Maybe in the war. I don't know. He sewed, the sleeve was sewn into his pocket. He always wore a nice suit. And the sleeve was sewn into the pocket. So I didn't know as a kid. We weren't ridiculing him. So here's One-Armed Frank. So he didn't take offense at that. Now, One-Armed Frank was another guy, a very nice guy, hung around in my father's store, milled about. He had one problem. And we're driving home. My father would give him a lift home to Williamsburg, Brooklyn, over the near the Kosciuszko Bridge, which stank unto itself from the Truns meat plant there. You could die from it. It was an abattoir where they killed the pigs. And the stink in the summer, you would get blind. It's lucky there weren't more accidents with cars falling off the Kosciuszko Bridge. The stink was so overwhelming when they were rendering the fat. He lived in one of those apartments with, like, the floors were irregular. That my uncle lived in one of them where he had a little Boston Terrier. I remember to this day, my uncle, that when the dog would pee on the floor, it would run down, like, from one side of the living room to the other on the linoleum. I swear to God, this is like old New York, sir. So Frank would drop him off. Now, if it was winter time, you had to keep the windows closed. You'd freeze to death, you know, 5 degrees, 10 below. You had a heater on. This guy, if you'd get him talk, you didn't want to talk to One-Armed Frank in the car because, unfortunately, he had a medicinal problem, the breath. And it would emit from the mouth. And at first, we didn't know what it was. And my father would think he hit an animal somewhere on the road, but with no animals in New York in those days on the road. And then they would, like you're driving, you pick up your shoe. You'd pick up your shoe to see if you had stepped in something. But no, it was One-Armed Frank talking. Now, what do you do in a case like that when you like the guy? You say you stink, open the window, you'd freeze to death. Anyway, I'm giving an example. You don't encounter people like that today. With the advent of Lavoris and the obsession with mouth cleanliness, you don't have any individuals around like that. Does anyone know? No, don't call me. That's a stupid show topic. Come on. And it's a little silly, I get it. But truthfully, where has the halitosis gone? It's been eliminated from our society. With the obsession with cleaning and dental floss and picks. I know guys who made $300 million inventing a dental pick. The guy retired. He invented the pick that you rub in between your teeth. I don't understand fortunes people make from things like this. Did I blow through another stop set? I did. I can't believe it. I meant to talk about serious stuff like Jeb Bush. You know, you think about it, Jeb Bush is so not ready for this. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust to protect my wealth with gold and silver. Call 800-BUYCOIN. Welcome back. Here's a little news story. We'll throw you some red meat. It's from Newsmax. Former Bill Clinton... President Bill Clinton attempted repeatedly to get approval from Hillary Clinton's State Department for lucrative speaking engagements in two of the most repressive countries in the world, North Korea and the Congo, according to ABC News. Listen to this. Are you ready? To show you what a prize this couple is. While Hillary served as Secretary of State, Bill earned speaking fees around the globe totaling more than $48 million. Now, what's interesting is the speeches had to be vetted by the State Department to ensure that there were no conflicts of interest with Hillary's work as America's top diplomat. See, this is how it works. This is Dianne Feinstein and husband. This is how it works. One works in the government, the other works in the private sector. Then they shift roles, and they rake it in. This is what's called the death of a nation. This is what's called corruption. The emails, which have come to light because of public records requests by the conservative group Citizens United, which sued the State Department to get the documents, show just how far Bill Clinton was willing to go to earn those lucrative fees, seeking approval for appearances with ties to two of the most brutal countries in the world. What more do I need to say to you? Is that what you really want running America? Is that the nation you want to live in, where you have despotic individuals who will go to any level to make a buck? According to the email, the Harry Walker Agency, which helps Bill Clinton coordinate his speeches, advised the 42nd president to decline the invitation to the Congo based on the particularly grim human rights record of Congo and its leader, Joseph Kabila. Can you believe this? $650,000 invitation to Bill Clinton to speak in the Congo. And for the speaking fee, dictators of the Congo and the Democratic Republic of the Congo required photos with the former president. Now you know how it works. Now you understand why no conservatives are ever invited to speak at any college. Now you understand what is what in the world of what. Now let's go to the callers that are left in this hour in the Savage Nation. WABC, Andrew, fire away. You're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Topics are...
Goodbye. That's the voice. I hear that voice. It's gone. It's Hell's Kitchen. KSFO, Vic, you got the last word. Fire away.
Dr. Savage, yeah, I'm out here in Ojai. Listen, first off, I might take Professor Irwin Corey with halitosis. That's one guy I might be able to handle with halitosis. He's beautiful, as you know. I'm calling you because creative neurotics. I've had a very distinguished career as a creative guy, and I'm diagnosed with all of the above, you know. And I learned the lesson of hard work, as you have, I think, correctly clocked, by watching my dear father, who committed suicide, was a severe manic depressive. And by observing him, I saw that while he struggled with his disease, there was also free will in there. And I could see that not operating as I thought he could have. And it was by watching him, and forgive me for saying this, Dad, but being a little lazy with his with free will and just letting the disease kind of overcome him, that when I became later on, as it kind of hits people in their young adult years, I realized that I had to battle with it, overcome it, and take charge of it.
That's right. You had to overcome your impulses, in other words, right?
Exactly.
I once met a very religious man, and he said to me, "Do you think I don't have feelings? Do you think I'm not attracted to women? Do you think I don't see what they look like?" He said that to me. He said, "Of course I do." He said, "I just control the impulse." In other words, you assume that a religious man doesn't have the same impulses or feelings that the rest of us do, but they do. But they suppress these feelings, which is what made all of civilization what it is. The suppression of impulses is the fountain of creativity. It's the essence of civilization. And the hippie era came along and said, "Let it all hang out, man. If it feels good, do it. Why not do it in the road?" Now look at the mess we have. Bums crapping in the street, races at each other's throats, all because of the hippie mentality.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of unprotected thought, borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
It is. Let it hit the next loud thing, then I'm going to do this song here. Why is it taking so long? Where'd the song go? It disappeared. All right, the plane just crashed again. He's still in the board operator. He's doing a great job. I couldn't do it. But every minute I feel like I'm having a heart palpitation. All right, turn it off. Forget music altogether. Let's just stick to talk radio. Welcome to the program. Hour three. This is where the rubber meets the road. This is where the boys are separated from the men, or the men from the boys. And here we are. So what do you want to talk about? We're talking about so many topics that for me to review them would bore you. So therefore, the best thing for me to do is read a headline from WorldNet Daily that just came out. Megyn Kelly eyeing move to Fox News' rival, CNN. According to Cheryl Chumley, cable network's biggest star wants to go mainstream. Now, why is CNN mainstream? I don't get it. Their ratings are lower than that of Fox, so they're offering the bimbo a bigger price. I mean, the host a bigger price, that's all. She's like any other person in that particular business. They go to the best price. It's the, you know, they say that a certain walk of life is the world's oldest profession. I would argue that the media is the world's oldest profession. In that, as I said in the last hour, the prophets were media people without microphones. And they were looking for an audience. So what's different? So she wants to go mainstream. She was flirting with CNN from Fox to CNN. Why would anyone want to go from Fox to CNN? Why would you want to be around those losers? I don't get them. More money, that's all. A bigger payday. What else? What, is there something new under the sun? Look, the fact of the matter is, she's ready for CNN. She's actually really ready for NBC. Megan has targeted Trump during the debate. And the fact of the matter is, the end was when she went on Howard Stern and talked about her breast size, her sex life, and her husband's apparatus. The woman has no dignity. She's an entertainer. That's all she's ever done. And Fox built her up. So now she's looking to jump for a bigger buck. It's the American way. And she belongs in the Commie News Network. Fox daily viewership is 42% of the market. CNN's daily viewership is 16% of the market, right? Why would anyone go there? More money. That's all. She's better suited for CNN. That's where her politics really lie. She'll be more relaxed. And I wish her good luck because it's a tough business to begin with. The last thing we want is for her to be upset in any way. That's the end of the news for this hour. 855-407-282-WMAL. Ben, welcome to the program. What's on your mind, Ben?
I wanted to tell you you're just the greatest.
I am.
I'm 77 years old, and I've been listening to you for, God, I don't know how many years. But I enjoy your show, and you say it the way it is, and this country's in deep doo-doo at the moment, and I'm not sure how it's ever going to get itself out of there. But you really...
Right, but what I'm trying to do is bring humor to the mess.
Well,
that's what I'm saying. I mean, you know, the truth is, we've all had a very rough week. The shooting to death this week of that young lady reporter and the newsman by that maniac, and the fact that the media is covered up, that he had a gay flag in his apartment, which is a very significant story, by the way, because, you know, all it took was one nut with a Confederate flag for the lunatics on the left to demand that the Confederate flag be ripped down, that statues of Confederate generals be overturned, that Confederate generals be disinterred. I mean, it's a sick society where we let the rabble determine the course of human events. But that's just what's going on. And that's because the man at the top wants it to go on that way. That's the truth. But I don't want to get sidetracked. I want to stay a little on the higher side, and I want to maintain the ability to read news stories intermittent with some humor. And that's what I've been trying to do. So let's go back to the neurotic creative story. Let's go back to my jokes. Let's go back to the news. Tony on WABC, what's your point? Go ahead, please.
Yes, Dr. Savage. I love when you get intellectual because I want to give you three concepts, and then I want your take on it. One is, what inspired me along this thinking is a guy named Kurt Gödel. He committed suicide. He was a genius mathematician who was a friend of Einstein's. And he wrote this book called Incomplete. And I got to understand what he was saying, that there is no system complete if it isn't man-made. The universe is an open-ended system, so therefore all the templates we make to understand things in a continuous pattern are really part illusion. So the only thing we have, and I'll quote William James, the universe is continuous and discontinuous. So that's an ambiguity that makes all the academic institutions intellectual prostitutes.
Well, let me interject, because if you and I were just talking as we are, even though it's across the airwaves with millions of people kind of listening in this passive audience, we're having a discussion about what is reality. Isn't that what we're saying?
Well, creativity, is it reality or is it the ability to create illusion, which is very much a part of reality?
I'll give you an answer that's off the wall, that's not direct. There's a famous story that helped me figure out what is reality. And this story, whether it's true or not, I don't know. A man goes up, he finally got to see Einstein. He'd been trying to see him for years. Einstein finally agreed to see him. And the man comes in and he says, "Hey, Einstein, Herr Einstein," he says, "there is no reality." He says that it's all an illusion. So as the story goes, Einstein gets up from his desk and slaps the man in the face. The man says, "What are you doing?" He says, "Is that an illusion or reality?" And so what I'm saying is there are some situations that make us so understand that there is real reality, that it's not all an illusion, like freezing to death, starving to death, taking a bullet in the battle. You know what I'm talking about, a woman giving birth. You know why women are more realistic than men? What I've heard, and it's 100% true, because a woman in childbirth knows reality in a way a man could never know it. And that's why women are generally more practical than men. They know reality from the point of view of their biology. I don't know if that answers it. I don't think that answers your statement. It even relates to your statement. Does it in any way begin to touch what you just said?
Well, but what I'm saying is it's only the genius that could be truly neurotic, because the average person can't handle uncertainty to that degree.
Ah, okay. Now, that's true. That, well, the worst thing for me is to be around normopaths. Normopaths get me very upset. They freak me out. And a normopath is a type of pathology. You're aware of that, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you know any normopaths that get you nuts?
Anything that's systematic, where I have to measure, drives me crazy. I can't measure. I hate it.
Are you a mathematician?
No, I only like pure math. If it's abstract, I love it. If it's anything to do with measurement, I gotta let it go. I can't handle it.
But Tony, what is your profession, or what was it? I'm not sure where you're coming from professionally.
I was a professional drama teacher. I was an actor, a singer. I'm writing now. In fact, I'm writing a book called The Myth of Authenticity. I'm going to send you a copy.
Oh, I love that. The Myth of Authenticity. I love that one. Bravo. The Myth of Authenticity. That's a good one.
I think you're going to love it.
You know, I love that one. That's an inside-out story.
And all the endorsements are there, like Immanuel Kant proved that there is no way to prove that 2 and 2 is 4, because 2 is the given. And where does the 4 come from?
I love it. This reminds me of my early days at Queens College as an undergraduate when I first read I and Thou by Martin Buber. Are you aware of that writing?
A little bit.
Well, go and read I and Thou by Martin Buber if you want to have your mind turned inside out and try to understand the set and frame, who we really are, and how you understand the difference between yourself and another person. Philosophically, I and Thou is one of the most amazing essays ever written. That requires great genius to write, and I think it requires a pretty extraordinary mind to understand, which is why Buber is not read anymore, incidentally, in colleges. Today, in Philosophy 101, they read the writings of a rap star, and that passes for philosophy today at the college. They say, oh, look at the genius in the writing of that rap artist. Although it's illiterate, degenerate, depressing, debasing, it's definitely got a message in it that's for our time, and that's going to be the new curriculum now in Philosophy 101, which is the writings of a rap star. That's the world we're living in. You know, I was thinking about this today, Tony, that the state of America has so declined in the last, well, since the hippie era. We are almost at the end line of the hippie era with what's going on, and the symbolism of the decay of our society is no better presented than that of bums openly dropping their pants and defecating in the streets as passerbys walk by and do nothing. Hear what I said? Passerbys do nothing. Because in a sane society, they would not let that man do that. In a sane society, the people themselves would not permit a man to do that. In a sane society, there would not be such a situation permitting men to defecate openly in the street. And so how do we get here? How do we get away from here? Why do people ignore it? Why do they let so many violent bums accost them in the streets without fighting back? Because they're afraid of the lawyers. They're afraid of a society that's turned it upside down, inside out. So where do we go from here, Tony? How do we save ourselves from this decline and fall of America? Can we ever come back from the decline and fall of America?
in 30 seconds or less.
Dr. Savage, the people who run the country are the people with the high IQs. The bums are the misfits who cannot fit. Think about how structured our life has become. Everyone with these high IQs only structure, 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 and overstructure. You can't live in an overstructured world. You're going to have a lot of misfits. The artists cannot live in a structured world.
All right, no, you make a very good point. But can a structured world tolerate the misfit ad infinitum?
If it's balanced. If the structure is...
But it isn't balanced. If the misfit can't fit in, the misfit needs to be given a place for the misfit. In that case, it's called a mental institution. What are we supposed to do? Step over fecal matter in New York City or San Francisco forever?
No. A different education. When he was young, you can't have all Einsteins. You got to have educations that are balanced, not for
commodity. Yes, you're right. But you also have to constrain those who refuse to be constrained. Tony, as usual, a pleasure to hear from you. I'm sorry we are so short of time. I love this type of discussion. It's certainly more interesting than Jeb Bush and which suit he's wearing today. The time is 19 minutes after the hour. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. It's the only company I trust to protect my wealth. Call 800-BUY-CO-IN. It is the Savage Nation, and it's Friday. So it's a departure from the normal heavy-duty news cycle. And it's also been a very, very tragic week in the news cycle. Awful. Mayhem. Just mayhem. And a declining civilization is not a pretty sight to look at. I see people in the suburbs, white couples. They're ignorant of what's going on. And I say to myself, ignorance is bliss. I mean, the adage is true. Ignorance is bliss. They walk around like nothing has changed. Nothing. It's like 1950s, Norman Rockwell, nothing's ever going to change. There's no ISIS. There's no race war going on in America. Obama's a wonderful man. Hillary is a wonderful woman. They live in a dreamland. And this is what passes for intelligence in the white suburbs of America. It's shocking, you know. What can you say to them? You're going to insult them? They're not going to accept what you say to them. They live in another universe. And this is basically it. It's hard to look at when a civilization is declining like this. Anyway, so I want to go back to some of the more, I don't know, topical issues rather than the heavy-duty news issues. So I'll take some calls. It's that simple. WBAP in Dallas. Jim, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hello, Michael. I started listening to you and watching you on TV when I was young. I think it was like a teenager. And then I picked you back up on a radio station. I live out in the country, and my daughter lives in town. And we commute on Fridays. I bring my granddaughter home, and she hears a promo about psychological nudity is just fantastic. So every time she has a truck, we listen to the band.
Well, so you've been listening to me since I had my 3-month television career on MSNBC?
I watched you on TV, and I missed.
Do you know that I had bigger ratings on Saturday afternoon on MSNBC than some of the hosts have at night? My afternoon ratings, they gave me the lowest possible slot. I had something like a 900,000 listenership, which was bigger than most of them have during the nighttime right now. And, of course, for political reasons, they got rid of me. And they don't really care about making money. It's not about that at all. It's to keep people like Al Sharpton off the street and protesting outside the offices of those who are robbing the nation blind. Thank you for the call, my friend. And that's a joke. But, Jim, on BAP, thanks for that very, very nice comment. WBAP again. Pamela, fire away. What's on your mind? We got a minute 30 to fire it up. Go ahead.
I will hurry. I enjoy your stories, the music you play, your sage wisdom, but most of all, your courage to stand up for people that are out here like us. The other day, when you were talking about the liberals and their eyes, I was listening to you.
Oh, I asked why most liberals have bug eyes.
Right, well...
They have bug eyes. I mean, have you noticed Hillary Clinton stares? She has a stare, like a Charles Manson look to her eyes.
Exactly.
Like she's going to, she stares at people to intimidate them. Hillary Clinton uses that stare, that Charlie Manson look, in order to make people, she frightens people into submission.
Also Obama and also Michelle. If you Google San Paku, and it shows just like Manson's eyes, and it will show you there, and it lists Obama and Michelle. And
right. Well, they have eyes that are different than you and I. Liberals have eyes different than you and I. That kind of rhymes. But Hillary Clinton stares at Charles Manson look. That's meant to intimidate. It's eerie. It's just eerie. Evita Perón. That's all. Think Evita Perón. Think of the Peronista coming to power.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now. 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282.
Savage.
It is time for the sound of the Savage Nation. We haven't played any sound bites. Let's begin with Donald Trump on Bloomberg saying tax the rich more, taking the wind out of the sails of those who would like to undermine him by saying he only represents the rich. Listen to clip number one.
I would say that the hedge fund people make a lot of money and they pay very little tax. I'm about the middle class. I want the middle class to be thriving again. We're losing our middle class.
So change the tax code?
I would change it. I would simplify it. I would.
But in this respect, you want to tax carried interest in the same way as ordinary income is taxed?
I would take carried interest out, and I would let people that are making hundreds of millions of dollars a year pay some tax, because right now they're paying very little tax, and I think it's outrageous. Right. I want to lower taxes for the middle class. I want to lower taxes for people that are making a lot of money that need incentives.
So that would affect not just hedge fund people. That would also affect people in limited real estate partnerships, of which you were in a fair number.
I'm okay.
So you're proposing that you'd like to raise taxes on yourself.
That's
in this
right.
instance.
That's right. I'm okay with it.
Okay.
I'm, you know, ready, willing. You see my statements. I mean, I do very well. I don't mind paying some tax. The middle class is getting clobbered in this country. You know, the middle class built this country.
All right, so the reporter thought that he would undermine Trump. Trump said, no, I don't mind paying more taxes. But he's talking about individuals such as those who run hedge funds who don't report their income as income. It's reported as something else, which, according to an IRS loophole, permits them to not declare it as a regular income. Therefore, they're not paying a full 39% of Fed. They're paying a much lower rate. And so he's saying, let's end that loophole. Very good. Now, in the next clip, he says he represents the silent majority in clip two. Let's hear that one.
So you have a silent majority in this country that feels abused, that feels forgotten, that feels mistreated. And it's a term that hasn't been brought up in years, as you know. People haven't heard that term in many years. And it's sort of interesting as to why. There are all different reasons. But I think it's a very descriptive term. Every time I speak, I have sold out crowds. Every time I speak, I have standing ovations. Every single time. It's the silent majority. They want to see wins. They want to see us have victory. We're not having victory anymore in this country.
That's correct. He's 100% right. Now, that was a Spiro Agnew statement that he represented the silent majority, which is fine. It doesn't matter where it came from. But we are the silent majority, and we have been silenced, and I've said that for years, and now Trump finally represents those of us who actually are the majority in this country, the hardest working people, the highest taxpayers in this country, and the ones who are dumped on by all of the others. And frankly, we're dying for a voice to come along, like Donald Trump, to stand up and speak for us. It's really very clear. So let's go to clip three.
There is no better expression for what's happening, because this is a movement. There is no better expression for what's happening than the expression silent majority, because that's what's happening. People are coming out. In Alabama, we had more than 30,000 people on a very, very warm day with rain getting ready to pour down in a stadium. It was an unbelievable. You saw 4,000 people the other night in Iowa. You saw what happened in New Hampshire. You saw what happened today for a luncheon where it broke every record. We have a silent majority that wants this country to have victories again, and we're going to do it.
Okay, so now compare him with Manson's eyes, Hillary, where she attacks people who want to stop the slaughter of babies, the infanticide of Planned Parenthood. She calls them terrorists. Listen to Manson in clip four.
Marco Rubio,
brags about wanting to deny victims of rape and incest access to health care, to an abortion. Jeb Bush says Planned Parenthood shouldn't get a penny. Your governor right here in Ohio banned state funding for some rape crisis centers. Extreme views about women. We expect that from some of the terrorist groups. We expect that from people who don't want to live in the modern world. But it's a little hard to take coming from Republicans who want to be the president of the United States.
I'm speechless. I don't know how anyone listening to this woman speak would think she's qualified to be a president. She's a demagogue of the lowest order. And as a woman, she ought to be ashamed of herself. As a woman, as a grandmother, she ought to be ashamed of herself doubly. When she watches those Planned Parenthood infanticide tapes, and she still comes out in favor of the Nazis in Planned Parenthood, there's nothing more I can say other than shame on you, Hillary Clinton. You should know better. Then she tries to get funny, and you know, there's some people who are just not funny. Here she's trying to get funny in clip five. Here's Charles Manson in clip five.
When you hear these Republicans, listen closely, because I can't hear them talking about anything real, anything that'll work. Don't be distracted by the flamboyant front runner. If you look at their policies, most of the other candidates are just Trump without the pizzazz or the hair. It is a great reality TV show, isn't it?
Can you believe this woman? Have you ever seen anyone more out of touch with reality? We were talking about reality on the show before. Here is a woman totally out of touch with reality. Now, here's another one. Here's Obama back from vacation with the billionaires. He goes down to New Orleans on the anniversary of Katrina. And again, he tries to stir up racial hatred. And he uses a new accent in a few places in clip six. Here is the entertaining Barack Obama in clip six.
When the storm washed away, a lot of middle school music programs, Roots of Music, helped fill that gap. And today it's building the next generation of musical talent.
That's
the next Irma Thomas,
that's,
or the next
what America needs,
Shorty, or the next Dr. John.
That's what we need.
There's a Marcellus kid in here somewhere.
See, that's what America needs. We don't need technical geniuses. We don't need mathematicians. We don't need great surgeons. We don't need great engineers. What we need is the next trombone shorty. That's what America needs, a nation of entertainers, so we can be entertainers for the world. Very good, Barack Obama. You're a real inspiration to the world. He gets even better in clip seven in New Orleans. Let's hear that one.
The whole federal government has gotten smarter at preventing and recovering from disasters and serving as a better partner to local and state governments. And as I'll talk about next week when I visit Alaska.
Oh, here we go.
Making our communities more resilient
here we go.
Is going to be
communities.
Increasingly important.
Here we go.
Because we're going to see more extreme weather events as the result of climate change.
There we go. Climate
deeper
change.
Droughts, deadlier mm-hmm. wildfires,
mm-hmm.
stronger storms.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The narrative. So why is he going next to Alaska? Well, there's the indigenous population, the Inuits, and if he can get them to vote, whew, think about that. He can take Alaska and put it right into his pocket. So let's see now. Obama, here it is. Here's the best one. You got to jump down the list, Jim, from 7 to 8 to 9 to number 10. Here comes the racial incitation in number 10.
The storm laid bare a deeper tragedy that had been brewing for decades because we came to understand that New Orleans, like so many cities and communities across the country, had for too long been plagued by structural inequalities that led too many people, especially poor people, especially people of color, without good jobs or affordable mm-hmm. health care or decent housing.
Here we go again, the narrative, the communist narrative, the racial hatred narrative. There he goes again. He's responsible for that shooting, by the way, in the other day when the reporter was shot. Do you realize that he is speaking to people who could pick up a gun and go shoot a white person for no reason after a speech like this? Do you understand that there are consequences to a man of his power influencing unstable people who are loaded with weapons to go out there and use those weapons on innocent people? You think it's not happening? The so-called knockout game is a direct result of Barack Obama egging on the mobs to go beat up white people, innocent, defenseless white people. And if you think I'm making it up, there are people who have tallied the number of incidents of innocent people being beaten up by individuals who are influenced by men like Barack Obama. Don't think that these things come out of the blue. None of this happened in my day. Father of murdered reporter vows to be the John Walsh of gun control. Now, this is an important story, and I think we need to listen to it because I kind of agree with him. And I know many of you don't want to hear it, but we have to go to clip number 13, and let's hear what he has to say.
It's senseless that her life and Adam's life were taken by a crazy person with a gun. If I have to be the John Walsh of gun control and, you know, I'm for the Second Amendment, but there has to be a way to force politicians that are cowards and in the pockets of the NRA to come to grips and make sense, have sensible laws so that crazy people can't get guns. You know, I'm not saying let's take away guns. I'm just saying let's make it harder for people with mental issues or people that, you know, like this guy that killed Allison and Adam, you know, to make it difficult for them to purchase guns. There's got to be a mechanism that gets put in place for that.
Well, he's right about that. The problem is, what's the mechanism? If the guy was on antidepressant medication, does that mean he shouldn't be able to buy a gun? How many police are on antidepressants? How many, you know, how many men in the military are now on antidepressants? This is the problem. How do you define mental issues? How do you define them? This is the problem. Of course we want the guns out of the hands of the nuts, but I'd like to know how you do that. I just don't know how to do that. This is the Savage Nation. I'll be back to take your calls right here at 855-407-282. Be here, be nowhere.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or SwissAmerica.com. It is the Savage Nation. I knew that the minute I said that there has to be some way to control the sale of guns to people who are mentally ill, that the gun, the Second Amendment absolutists would flood the lines, which is happening right now. It's still not going to change the reality that there are guns in the hands of the wrong people. And just as Donald Trump obviously has intelligence with regard to the illegal aliens by saying first he is going to deport the criminals in jail, I've said that for years. You start with those who already committed felonies and have been arrested, and you empty our prisons of all the illegal aliens. 30% of all prisoners are illegal aliens. Deport them first. That opens up a whole vacuum, and into the nature abhors a vacuum. Into that vacuum go many, many others who are here illegally and afraid of the law. That's number two. And it's the same with guns. I'm sorry. We have to start talking about this rationally. I don't want guns in the hands of mentally ill people. Do you? KSFO, Greg, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Mike, I disagree with your point about controlling the guns, because there's enough gun control laws on the books already. If you start putting more laws on the books, what's going to happen is you're going to take the most defenseless people, our elderly and whatnot, and you're going to leave them defenseless against the thugs.
So how are we going to take... Well, I didn't say take guns away from the elderly. I said first start by... I didn't finish my thought. Just as I say you start by deporting the illegal aliens in prison, you start by sending the military into the worst neighborhoods in America and have them disarm all the gangs. And start by removing all of the weapons out of the hands of all of the gang members in all of the worst neighborhoods in America. That creates a vacuum. That's another step that needs to be taken. I don't see what's wrong with that idea.
Well, I'd agree with you except for this. There's always somebody that, like myself, I'm a martial artist. What if some guy that's a martial artist loses a few screws and goes and purchases a samurai sword and can do immense damage to a number of people if he loses it?
Well, you raise a very interesting point, Greg, as a martial artist, because I remember when I was a child, I learned that a professional boxer could not get into a fist fight with an ordinary man without going to prison for I think, assault, because he had an unfair advantage in the sense that he could kill an average person with a punch. Are you saying the same thing should apply to martial artists? I don't think so.
Well, yes, it does apply to martial artists. Once you have belted at a certain level, you can be brought up on felony charges if you use that mechanism to...
Real? Is that true, really? If you're at a certain level of, let's say, jiu-jitsu, for example, or karate, and you get into a fight with a non-professional martial artist, you can be charged with, attempted homicide?
That's correct. That's what the belting process is about. That's all tracked. And if you're belted as...
Wow. Oh, so that's a way... That's like... that's interesting. So that's martial arts control.
That's right, because you can't be training a bunch of people in this type of physical defense or offense and have them running around using this in a method that would cause harm on people without knowing...
Well, Greg, you now raise a very, very, very interesting idea. It's the same with boating. You know that there are no licenses for boating? You have individuals who buy boats and go out on boats and they don't know how to run them. They have no, they don't even have to get the equivalent of a driver's license. Is there some reason, I know I'm going to step in it again, I'm only asking the question, that people should not have to have basic training in the use of a weapon in order to use that weapon or buy the weapon?
I agree with that. You know, I think that you should have to go through 100 safety course and the concealed weapons permit. I got a CCW. And I'm in agreement with that, and the background checks, and making
sure... Well, that, you see, I guess I'm biased. Greg, I'm kind of biased, because I also have what you just mentioned, those letters, those important letters. I have to go through a background check every time. I have to take a retraining course every time. I'm under extreme regulation in terms of when I can even touch that weapon, where I can touch it. I'm not allowed to have a drink when I have that weapon with me. You're aware of all of that, right?
Correct. Yeah, the same with me. When I carry my weapon, you're not...
Well, what would be wrong with applying the same rules to the ordinary American? I don't understand that.
Well, I'm not opposed to that myself, you know, but if you start involving the...
But I know, but then you start involving the government, the fear is the next thing they're going to put in more draconian laws, and the next thing, you're going to not have any weapons at all, and the ultimate freedom of the Second Amendment goes away. I got that. But something has to be done, Greg, and we're starting at least the conversation.
Yeah.
That's what I'm getting at. That, or at least we're having a conversation, and thus far you and I haven't disagreed with each other on guns.
I feel bad for that man because, you know, I'm a dad too, and if something happened to one of my kids, man, I don't know what I'd do. But
I understand. So he said he believes that we have a right to bear arms, believe in the Second Amendment, but he thinks something needs to be done to keep guns out of the hands of the mentally ill. So the caller, Greg, and I at least started the conversation, which is what is wrong with what we talked about. I don't know what is wrong with it. I need a license to drive a car. I don't need a license to drive a boat. I don't need a license to have a gun, do I? What do I? Think about it. That's what the Savage Nation specializes in.